finger, covered by hers.
I fuck myself to you every night,
she whispers, and I nearly explode. She gasps, then freezes in place. The world goes still and savagely hot. It sparks, crackling like wildfire as she calls out my name, coming on the counter mere seconds later. It's the sexiest thing I've ever seen, and it eats me alive. As she's panting, she lifts her mouth to me, an offering, like I could resist her anymore. I grab her face and kiss her hard, ruthlessly, tug her against me, own that gorgeous mouth. She wraps her legs around my waist, tugging me closer, then breaking the kiss to say,
"You'd better let me objectify your cock now."
It takes me a beat to reconnect her words to the night we met, when she wanted to suck me off and I stopped her so I could eat her sweet, perfect pussy instead. I have no regrets from back then, but I know I'd regret stopping this. One glance at the oven clock tells me there's not nearly enough time for the things I want to do to her in bed. My flight leaves in a few hours, but there's time for more rule breaking. There is absolutely fucking time. After I remove my apron, I scoop my hands around her ass and lift her off the counter. Get down on your knees, take my dick out, and suck me off like you do when I picture your mouth every goddamn night.
Finally,
she teases as she drops down to her knees and tugs at my sweats. I'm so turned on, so aroused, I feel like a hedonist taking the pleasure of her mouth as she pushes down my briefs. When my cock springs free, she slides her teeth across her bottom lip, like she approves of my dick. "Will that work for you?" I ask, playfully. She smiles.
"Your dick will do."
"I want to fuck the innuendo right out of your mouth," I growl.
"Then do it."
With mischief in her eyes, she says,
"After all, you wanted to have fun besides hockey. Here's your chance."
A laugh bursts from me. A fucking laugh is a prelude to a blowjob. Who even is this woman in my kitchen on her knees, about to lick the head of my dick? But the second her pink tongue teases the tip, questions fall out of my head, along with thoughts and reason. I'm nothing but a live wire as my roommate twirls her tongue along the tip, treating me like a piece of candy, humming as she goes. "You look fucking incredible," I murmur. That catches her attention. Josie stops.
"Hold on,"
she says, and like she just remembered she's wearing them, she darts up a hand, removes her glasses, and sets them on the counter. She returns to my aching dick in seconds. While she draws me back into the warmth of her mouth, she reaches up and undoes her hair from the messy bun. It falls in wild, just been fucked waves over her shoulders. I'm toast. "You're my sexy librarian," I say. Then I push in, taking off your glasses. I thread a hand through those lush chestnut locks as she parts her lips wider, letting down your hair. She murmurs something against my dick. I'm not sure what, but it sounds like, "For you, that's all I need to hear." I curl both hands around her head. She grips my thigh with her right hand while she curls the left around the base of my cock. She's pumping me and sucking me, and I'm sizzling everywhere, crackling in my cells. My bones vibrate with hot, urgent need like they do every damn night when I'm alone in my bed. "I picture this," I mutter, beginning my confession. She looks up at me with wide eyes, asking for more of the story. "At night, I get off to you," with a throaty,
"Yes."
She urges me to thrust deeper. "Bet you want to see that," I say, remembering how she stared wantonly at me, fisting my cock the night we met. She nods. "You have no idea how many times I've wished you'd come up the stairs," I say, needy, hungry. She groans, keeps going. "Me too. I'm pumping and confessing." I listen for your footsteps as I fuck my hand. I picture you turning the corner into my room. A spark jolts through me. My thighs quake. I see you in the doorway. Heat builds as I thrust between those gorgeous lips. I tell you, to ride me, I say. Then all the bliss crashes into me at once, a punishing, ruthless wave. Coming, I warn, and there's no stopping this orgasm. It's got me in its grip, and she holds on, her fingers circling my dick, her mouth clamping down as I spill. She swallows my release. I grunt and groan, enjoying every single second of fucking my roommate's mouth. She sucks me dry with a satisfied sound. Seconds later, she pops off, wiping her wet lips with the back of her hand. Her grin is both devilish and angelic as she licks her lips, then nods to the counter and the cinnamon pastries.
We really should put those in the oven.
Somehow, it's not awkward as we finish baking the cinnamon treats, stopping a couple times to take pictures like we did outside the theater. It's almost like we slide right back into the friendship zone, the one we've been living in for the last month or so. The roomie rule, so to speak.
A record of the list,
she says as she snaps each pic.
And I like records of things.
Such a librarian, I tease.
You can take the girl out of the library, you can't take the library out of the girl.
While the goodies are baking, she reads the promo material in the kitchen as I finish packing my bag. When I return to the kitchen, I lift my nose and inhale the sweet, doughy scent. It almost smells as good as her.
You're like a dog,
she says with fondness.
And I mean that with great affection.
I like dogs, I say. So I'll take that as a compliment.
I keep meaning to ask about the dog tattoo on your wrist.
I look down at it, running a finger along the inked silhouette. I always wanted to adopt one. My dad said it would never fit my lifestyle as a hockey player. She frowns.
That sucks, but I kind of get it.
Yeah, me too, I say. Guess I showed him. I got a permanent one. She laughs.
You sure did.
She offers me a baked good, then recaps the important parts of the promo with the Las Vegas team, the Sabres. The first game we're playing on this road trip is against them, and we're taking part in the team's recycling initiative. As I take a bite of the cinnamon sugar puff pastry, she reviews the details Everly sent over on the recycling bins the Sea Dogs and the Sabres are delivering together tomorrow morning around town. This is good, I say, with a foodgasm-esque moan after a bite.
The pastry?
She asks, lifting her phone to take another picture. Yeah, but also you reviewing the details? My brain appreciates hers so much. She lowers her phone and sets it down with a pleased smile.
Good. Also, it's cool that you're doing this, the team and you. We have some green-centric initiatives coming up at the library. Makes me think of another item on the list.
Volunteer, number 6, I say, skipping over number 5, since she's brought up the subject of number 6.
We'll have to figure out what that would be. You sure you're up for it? It's probably not just a one-time thing.
That's one of the many things I like about challenge number 6. Yeah, I am, I say. But we shouldn't linger on all those things right now with the clock ticking closer to my flight. I nod toward her room where she keeps the folded sheet of paper. We need to cross off eat dessert for breakfast, though.
We do. We're 40% of the way through,
she calls out as she hustles to her room. You can math, I say dryly. But not only is she right, that benchmark also feels right, given how long she's been here in San Francisco. And the time she still has left in the city. Given what's still to come on the list, too. There's plenty of time to finish it, though. No rush. Seconds later, she returns with the paper and a pen. She hands them both to me.
It was easy for me. You cross it off. I'm proud of you.
Laughing, I shake my head. For eating?
Yes, do it.
Unfolding the list carefully, I spread the paper out in a freshly cleaned section of the counter. This piece of paper feels like an artifact. A precious heirloom that should be treated with care. I lift the pen, but don't cross the item off right away. I consider the list again, the reason she has it, the love behind it, the gift her aunt gave her, a way not just to remember her, but to move on, to keep on living. Maybe she wanted to give you a roadmap for life without her. A good life, I add for emphasis, looking at Josie and reaching for a strand of fallen hair, tucking it behind her ear. For the way to move on, by giving you the way through. She takes a big breath, nodding, perhaps considering that, then meets my eyes. Hers are shining faintly, but a hint of a smile forms on her lips.
Maybe she was,
Josie says thoughtfully.
And maybe she wanted me to have fun, too.
Did you have fun? But I don't want to sound like I'm fishing for sex compliments. I try to backpedal with baking, I mean. She rolls her eyes as she roams a hand up my arm, curling it around the sunburst that starts in my biceps and climbs over my shoulder.
Baking was so much fun,
she says dryly. So much fucking fun, I say, getting her completely.
Now cross it off, Wes.
I turn my focus back to the list. 1. Have a one-night stand with a sexy stranger. That's done. 2. Overcome a fear. Take a class you can't prepare for, baby. Psst. Improv class time. That's done. 3. Make a friend who's nothing like you. You learn the most from them. That's done. 4. Eat dessert for breakfast. Check. I cross off the 4th one. And the thing is, I feel a little like a scofflaw. A lot like a rule breaker. And it's seriously fun. After I put down the pen, I hold up the flaky treat, dusted in sugar and spice, take another bite, then chew. When I'm done, I sigh the most satisfied sigh. And I don't feel guilty.
That's good too.
But I feel a little guilty about touching her, especially because I don't want to stop even though I know I should. Setting down the pastry, I reach for her. Josie, I say, my tone serious as I cup her shoulders. With a rueful smile, she nods.
I know. We shouldn't do that again.
We really shouldn't, I say, hating myself for saying it but knowing I have to. But an hour later, after we've cleaned up, I'm at the door saying goodbye and all the shouldn'ts can't stop me from hauling her close and kissing her hard. A kiss I want her to feel for the rest of the day. No, I amend that. I want her to feel it the entire time I'm gone. And that is a problem I don't know how to fix. She hands me a huge Tupperware container full of dessert for breakfast.
For the team.
I take it. Thank you.
And good luck in New York,
she says, since our road trip ends there against my former team.
Your first time playing them since you were traded?
Damn. How does she keep doing this? Knowing the little bits of intel and what they might mean. My heart slams harder against my chest. All these little details make it impossible not to feel all the things. Yeah, it is.
You'd better kick their ass then,
she says. I plan to, I say. Then take one more kiss and go, knowing I'm not going to stop thinking about her at all while we're apart. Maybe that's the real problem. Chapter 25, A Fucking Page Turner. Wesley. Note to self, never bring baked goods in the team plane again. I've gotten nothing but grief since I cracked open the container and passed it around, and there are no signs of stopping. We're gonna call you Muffin Man now, Asher decides, after he polishes off a treat in record time. We've barely reached our cruising altitude, and he's wiping crumbs off his mitts. I point out the obvious, even though it's pointless. That isn't a muffin. Asher waves a hand dismissively. It's either that or we call you Doughmaster. Somehow that's worse, I say. Didn't he make everything, though? The Muffin Man? Max barks in question from across the aisle as he waves his pastry around, then takes a bite. Who knows? Who cares? Asher asks with a satisfied smile, clapping my shoulder. You should seriously consider opening a shop. These are fuck all better than the way you played last night. Yep, this is the hell they give me. I scored a goal, you dickhead. My bad, it was one less than the number I scored, so I'd forgotten, he says, the cocky fucker. Do you need a separate jet for your ego, Callahan? This remark comes from Chase, who's a row behind us, sitting with Riker, one of our top defenders. Not a bad idea, Riker grumbles. Come to think of it, I wouldn't mind that at all, Asher says, offering a smug smile. Riker leans forward from his seat so he's locking eyes with the guys in our row. Asher and me, and Max across the aisle. You know there's an urban legend that the Muffin Man was a murderer? The fuck? Asher asks. Supposedly, he went around London murdering children, using muffins as a lure, Riker says. In the same tone, he'd tell you where to get a great taco. Nothing fazes the dude. Asher's face goes ashen. That's horrifying. This is why I don't read nursery rhymes to my little daughter, Hugo calls out from his row behind us. I read her sports news instead. Some might say that's scarier. Also, nursery rhymes are supposed to be scary. It's literally their purpose. A female voice chimes in from a row or two in front of us. It's Everly, weighing in. Hey, Ev, is it true that Max was chirping nursery rhymes at reporters, and that's how he scared them all off? Max stretches across the aisle and knocks Asher upside the head. If you played on the other team... Asher flashes his golden boy grin. But I'm on your team, you lucky bastard. Max shakes his head, then waves his pastry in my direction. Here's what I want to know, Muffin Man. Do you have an apron? Yes, and the team captain's sister gave it to me, and I like the way she stared wantonly at me when I wore it. I especially like that she was sending me a subtle message with it, and I fucking love that the illustrations on it inspired a new use for lipstick. Remind me to never bake for the team again, I say, mostly so I don't linger too long on thoughts of Josie. Everly still popped up in her seat, twisted around, and her eyes connect with mine.
Sounds like the cinnamon puff pastries came out great, though.
I tilt my head. You knew what I was making?
I shopped with Josie, took her to my favorite grocery store in the city.
A warmth spreads in my chest from this knowledge, which is a stupid reaction. Of course Josie shopped for the supplies, of course she bought the ingredients. I know all this. She told me she wanted to, and she said she wouldn't let me pay. And yet I still find it adorable, the idea of her shopping for the baking we did this morning. So adorable, it's making my heart flip annoyingly in my chest. What a pointless reaction. Cool, I say to Everly, just to say something. You made these with our teammate's sister? Asher asks with genuine curiosity. Yeah, she's my roomie, I add. Is it weird to bake with your roommate? Am I wearing a sign that says I've got it bad for her? Or worse, one that says I nearly fucked her today? I picture Josie spreading her legs for me on the counter a few hours ago. Josie getting down on her knees after we baked. I smirk over my little secret. Baking is foreplay. I close my eyes to sleep even though it's a short hop over to Vegas. Enjoy the treats, I say. My roomie can fucking bake better than you clowns play hockey. But as I drift off, I'm hoping Christian didn't hear me. When we land in Vegas, it's time to focus on work. Only work. I grab my bag and head off the plane, mentally reviewing the plays we've been prepping for this stretch of games. On the tarmac, Christian catches up to me, clapping my shoulder. Those were good. I guess the treats made it all the way around the team. Glad you liked them. You and Josie made them. Is this front page news? Yes. That was nice of you, he says, like I did it to entertain her. She was always into that, baking. No idea how she got into it since the rest of us never did. Seriously? He doesn't know? Her aunt, I say, then correct my response to your aunt. Christian's expression is blank for a long beat. Then recognition must dawn. Right. That makes sense. How well does he even know his sister? Josie told me she was in a committed relationship with baking the morning after she moved in, and then she shared recently that she used to bake with Greta all the time. I've only known her for a month or so, but this is part of the Josie file. But I give Christian the benefit of the doubt. He's got not one, but two newborns at home. Yeah, it's one of her things, I add evenly, so I don't let on in my voice that it's another thing about his sister that I like. That list of things is long. He smiles. I told you she'd be a good roomie. Quiet, reads all the time, likes to bake. Thanks again, man. I get what he's doing. Truly, I do. He's still selling me on this living arrangement. Understandable. He asked the team to pitch in when his family was in a bind. I offered. He wants to make sure I'm still good with it. Little does he know I'm so good with it, so damn good with it. I'm annoyed she's leaving in less than 2 months. Josie and I have barely talked about the end of her time in San Francisco. But now that we're nearly half done with her list, I'm thinking more about the expiration date of her stay. I'm wishing her job wasn't short term. I'm wishing for a lot of things, like a lot less complications. But as Christian peels ahead of me to chat with Chase and Riker, doing his captain duties of catching up with everyone. I study him for a beat longer. I admire the guy. He's had a hell of a career. He's shared some great tips since I've been with the team. Trouble is, I'm not so convinced anymore why he thinks he has a say in who his sister dates or sleeps with. Or if his opinion, if it's even real or mere bravado, matters to me. Sure, I understand team chemistry, I truly do. Of course, it's important, and yeah, I get that dates and romance can go awry, and you don't want bad blood between teammates if that happens. But I don't tell Natalie who to go out with, and I'm not sure Christian should be telling anyone either. That night at the hotel when I'm alone in my room, I reach out to my sister. Wesley, what would you say if I told you who to date or not date? 10 seconds later, my phone rings. When I pick up, Natalie is cackling, a long laugh that lasts forever. That's funny, Wesley. That's really funny. And that's illuminating in its own way. Glad I amused you. Who is she? And on a scale of 1 to besotted, how far gone are you? I scoff as I flop down in the king-size bed in the room. I'm not far gone. Why are you asking the question, then? You never asked questions like this when you were with Anna. True, but my relationship with Anna wasn't fraught with complications. It wasn't full of reasons why we were a bad idea. Although Anna and I were a bad idea in the end because we didn't gel. That was different. So what is it about this new relationship that's making you ask the question? She asks then, as the sounds of the city play in the background, she says, Sit, Frosty. She must be out walking her dog and stopping on a corner. I drag a hand through my hair and sink down into the pillow. It's not a relationship. Is it with the girl in the t-shirt? I am see-through. Yes, but she's my roommate. Natalie lets out a low whistle. Oh, that hurts. Tell me about it. We shoot the breeze a little longer, and she tells me about Frosty's day. She adopted him recently from little friends and has been treating him like a prince. Today he went to the dog camp with the indoor pool and spent most of the day fetching tennis balls, she says. So he's only a little bit spoiled, I ask. He's exactly as spoiled as he should be. Tell him I'll see him soon. I will pass on the message. When we hang up, I stare at my phone, weighing what's next, debating with myself. On the one hand, I shouldn't act like I'm in a relationship with her, especially since I'm fucking not. On the other hand, I want to text her. And lately, want wins. Wesley. The cinnamon thingies were a hit, and the guys gave me hell.
Josie. Because?
Because they're dicks.
Prank them.
Not a bad idea, you prankster.
Do that one where you cut the bottom of their laces so they can't tell at first.
You know hockey pranks?
Yes.
I don't ask why. It's obvious, her brother. And the more I get to know Josie, the less I want to make my relationship with her about him. He's hardly the reason I need to resist her. I need to resist her because I live with her, and because she's leaving. I shift to another topic altogether. She told me about the cat at her library and sometimes sends me pics. How's Raccoon?
He spends a lot of time licking his balls.
She's so blunt sometimes it kills me. I'll probably regret asking, but where in the library does he lick his balls?
On a big yellow chair in the children's section. He has zero shame, and since he's neutered, zero balls.
But so much hope. The Vegas Sabres are sluggish the next night, but we are sluggisher. It's a slow game. Hardly anyone crashes into the boards or slams into each other. I'm not an enforcer, so it's fine by me. But we need something to liven up this game since we deserve to lose. During the second intermission, Christian is fired up. In the visitors' locker room, he's all business as he says, We can do better. We came here to win, and we're all skating like it's a fucking stroll in the park, and we're hungover. Get out there and show some grit. It's embarrassing, the acknowledgement of how we're playing, but a swift kick in the uniform pants with a sharp blade is what we need. When we hit the ice for the final period, we're chasing the puck ferociously, making plays ruthlessly, and eking out a win on enemy ice. An hour later, we're soaring out of the city of sin, its glittery lights and bright billboards fading in the midnight sky as we fly toward the East Coast. The plane is quiet, as night flights often are. There's no trash talk at this hour. So I take out my phone to listen to some music. But before I click on an R&B playlist that helps me sleep, I find a note from my roomie.
Nice turnaround.
I smile stupidly against the dark window so no one can see how I look right now. The glass is cool, but I'm warm everywhere. I don't want to talk about me with Josie, not with my teammates around, and honestly, not that much in general. I want to talk about her. It was, but what are you up to? Also, it's late. Go to bed.
That's where I am. Here's your proof of bed.
She sends a picture of the lower half of the bed. Her legs are clearly under the covers. A paperback sits on the white blanket. Zooming in, I read the title. Someone Else's Ring. New book. Does this mean you've finished the thriller? The Woman in the Hotel?
I did, and the thrill was thrilling.
How's this one?
It reads like you fuck.
Forget warm. I'm red hot under the collar of my dress shirt, remembering the words she wrote on hotel stationery more than a month ago. He fucked, like a page turner you didn't want to put down. Is it just me or is Josie getting naughtier, bolder, more brazen? Pretty sure it's not just me, it's her turning up the heat. I'm feeling the burn in the dark of the quiet jet streaking across the sky. Here it's like no man's land, free of consequences, devoid of risk. A place where we can flirt because of the miles between us. So I tap out a reply. Bet I still read like that.
You'd keep me up all night?
Like a page turner, Josie. Like a fucking page turner.
Chapter 26, The Same Space Problem, Josie. I have reached peak librarian awesomeness. I am officially better than an algorithm, and Amazon has nothing on me as I update our Your Next 5 Reads list with fresh recommendations. It's an extra thing I wanted to do, and so far, the digital initiative has been a success. It's a new service I've set up during the last few weeks, something we've been promoting on the branch's website since then. Patrons submit their favorite books and top authors, telling us what they liked, and then add what they might be in the mood to read next. We, usually me, write back within a few hours with 5 recommendations of books, either paperback, digital, or audio, and explain why we think they'll like them. It's a mood reader's dream, and I review the final one I worked on today, checking each rec. Yep, these look good. Feeling like a smarty pants in the best of ways, I hit the send button when a flurry of papers flies my way. I jerk my gaze away from the computer screen. Of course. A giant Siamese has landed on the counter, sending pages soaring as he gives zero fucks. I grab the papers, sorting them as Raccoon stretches his humongous body across the keyboard, belly up and carefree. You bad boy, you knocked everything off the counter, I say, chiding him, but he doesn't respond to criticism, being a cat and all. Talia's at the other end of the desk here on the second floor. It's no use, she says, popping up from her chair to wander my way. He's above it all. Clearly, I say, looking down at the creature relaxing shamelessly on the keyboard. He's trying to lure me now with his big sexy routine. Ah, I see you've learned his trick. Yes, he does this long, languid stretch where he offers his sleek belly, ostensibly for petting, but if you touch him there on the very belly he's offering, he will strike. He's a touch-me-and-die cat, she says nonchalantly, scratching Raccoon's chin, the one acceptable zone on this cat for petting. So sweet. And yet, I'll miss him, I say, then wince, wishing I could take those vulnerable words back. I shouldn't be putting sad vibes out in the air. I wasn't hired for this temporary job to talk to my boss about how much I'll miss this place when I finish the contract in 7 weeks, but who's counting? Talia gives me a sympathetic look. This place is addictive, she says. But that's all. She doesn't add, hey, how about I pry open our budget and hire you for a permanent gig? You're the city's most awesome new digital specialist librarian. It is, I say brightly. Drinks this week with the crew? We're doing Thursday night this time, she says, shifting to another topic altogether. And we're going to add trivia this week. Book trivia? There is nothing worse than librarians trying to best each other with book knowledge. It's like a battle royale of the nerds, and no piece of information is left unhurled at your rival. Please, she scoffs. We do pop culture, sports, music, that sort of thing, so it's more challenging. We need it to be hard. I'm in. Librarians like it hard, after all, I add, then realize the full weight of the innuendo in the statement. Talia sees it too, tilting her head in approval, then tapping her wine-colored nails against the counter. That ought to be on a sticker, girl, she says, then heads off in a swish of flowy magenta skirt and jingly bracelets. Come to think of it, that's not a bad idea. Maybe I could become a sticker queen and stay in San Francisco on the riches I'll amass as I peddle a line of cheeky librarian sayings. Meet me in the stacks. Let's do it on the reference desk. Dewey decimal to me all night long. I have a free minute, so I Google the price of cute stickers, then the best fonts for stickers, then where to sell stickers. But soon enough, I sigh, vanquished already by practical matters. There's just not a big enough market for naughty librarian stickers. I take off my glasses for a second to pinch the bridge of my nose, since studies show ideas flow faster when you pinch your nose. Oh, I've got it. What if I can win another grant from the Violet Delia Foundation for Library Digital Empowerment? Talia would probably say nice things about me to the nonprofit. Maybe they'd crack open the coffers and fund this position for longer. I could look for other grants too, but most grants in my field fund professional development for librarians, not their salaries. This is a rare one, but if I can prove I'm a unicorn... I'm also a workhorse, though. I've been scanning the job listings regularly in San Francisco. Old habits die hard, and when I was finishing grad school, I was glued to the job listings. While I haven't found any openings yet, I can widen the search beyond the city, maybe. Like San Jose, or Oakland, or Marin County, I can apply to anything within a 50-mile radius, even though I don't have a car. But I'll deal with that issue later. I'm aces at applications. Not only did I apply to 16 colleges, accepted at 13, I submitted my resume for more than 150 jobs before I landed this one. I have an endless well of application energy, and I will put it to good use tonight in the job hunt. Because I want to stay here, close to this lovely city, and my brother, and Maeve, and Fable, and Everly. As I leave that evening, heading onto the streets of the Upper Haight to catch my bus, I text Wes to tell him what happened today. Well, not my blanket the Bay Area with my CV idea. That would definitely seem clingy. Like, hey, you life hacked a lipstick tube into a sex toy to get me off on the counter. Clearly, you want me to stay in town, don't you? Nope, I'll keep those plans to myself. Instead, I tap out another note. Josie, it's a wonder I still have a job. Today at work, I said the following out loud to my boss. Librarians like it hard. As I'm getting off the bus 20 minutes later, his reply lands.
Wesley, can confirm.
I laugh and blush all at once. The idea takes a hold of me, though, the stick-around-town one. That evening, after I whip up some carrot bacon, I spend an hour crunching on my veggie food while I write a bang-up cover letter to the Violet Delia Foundation for Library Digital Empowerment, letting them know what I've accomplished so far and what else I hope to achieve. I send it off, then hunt for library grants, just in case there are any I might have missed. I search for more grants on the way to work the next day, too, but I only unearth a few I'd really qualify for. Or really that this library or any others in the city would qualify for to keep me on, but I check the job boards for open positions as well. I'm ready to pounce on any. Spoiler alert, there aren't any for, gulp, entry-level librarians. Sigh, sometimes starting out just sucks. But there's plenty of time. I've got 7 weeks left in this job. I'll keep at it. In the meantime, I order some stickers for fun. On Thursday at work, the digitization center is quiet after I teach one of the digital literacy classes, but my brain isn't. Maybe meet me in the stacks isn't such a bad idea. Not for a sticker, though, for something else. I take some notes and work on some ideas all day. Then I'm out for blood at trivia night. Newsflash, our team wins. And Talia lifts her beer in a victory toast. You're hereby required to play on my team for the rest of the year. I smile, even though I don't feel it as much inside. It's nice to be wanted, but wanting won't get me to stay. The next day after work, I take off for a girls' night out with Maeve and Fable. I invited Everly, but of course she's traveling with the team, and they don't return till Saturday night, so she can't join us. When I meet up with my friends by Patricia's Green in Hayes Valley, a cute little park and playground, I'm giddy to share my news. Is it news, though? Nothing has actually happened, but still, after hugs and hellos, I spill the beans. I'm looking into a grant extension and searching for a job to see if I can stay. With her wild, blonde-streaked hair framing her pale face, Maeve gazes heavenward to the starlit November sky, pressing her palms together. My prayers are answered. She'll be here, goddess. She'll be here. First, I love that you pray to the goddess, I say. Who else would she pray to? Fable asks dryly. Exactly. And second, I say, frowning as reality kicks me in the ass again. It's a long shot, but I'm trying. Fable squeezes my arm. That's how you start. Maybe there will be something perfect for you. Librarian jobs aren't easy to come by, and they don't pay gobs. I know librarians a few years older than I am who work a couple part-time library jobs in the hopes of landing a full-time one with benefits. But you never know. We'll see what happens, I say, and since I don't love hogging the attention, I make a shooing gesture to Hayes Street. Let's start. We're doing a photo scavenger hunt together. Rather than competing against each other, though, we're working in tandem. If we check off all the items in 2 hours, we'll get cake. This is the kind of team-building activity that calls my name. I click on the list on my notes app since I planned it. I'm kind of the friend group's social director. I start the clock. First one, mirror selfie in a fancy bathroom, I say, then swivel around, tapping my chin as I scan the surroundings, catching the facade of a sleek, modern building a few blocks away. How about the resort hotel? That place is 5 stars. Maeve nudges me. Which you know since you were there. I smile smugly, a fond, filthy memory sashaying past me of the night Wes and I spent in that hotel. The way he manhandled me in bed, giving me exactly what I'd learned that night I craved. A man to toss me around and eat me out. And it was quite a night, I say with a throaty rumble. I've given this hotel 5 out of 5 for being a wingwoman. My boss owns that hotel, Fable puts in, so nonchalant as we walk through the evening crowd on Hayes Street toward the resort. Ma'am, excuse me, Maeve says, whipping her gaze to Fable. My boss owns that? I'm gonna need details. He owns it, not me, but this shouldn't be a surprise since I do work for... Fable stops and lowers her voice to a conspiratorial whisper. A billionaire? Color me intrigued. Tell me more about this billionaire boss. Is he hot? Ripped? Does he want to bend you over the desk? Fable swats my arm. I'm dating someone. Steven, you know? She says a little primly, mentioning the bartender she started seeing a few months ago. So the answer is no. No, your boss is not hot because you're dating someone else? I ask with a doubtful arch of an eyebrow. That doesn't add up. Maeve piffs. Oh, he's hot, all right. I've seen pics of Wilder Blaine, she says, mentioning Fable's boss, who owns the city's Renegades football team and some hotels, as well as some green energy businesses. Pretty sure he's San Francisco's most eligible billionaire and sexiest. The man is rough around the edges hot in a tailored suit. Well, tell me more, Maeve, I tease. I'm just saying, Fable needs to open her eyes. As we reach the Shishi Hotel, Fable relents a bit with, Yes, empirically, Wilder Blaine is good-looking, but I can't think of him that way since he's my boss. Also, hello, I'm dating someone. You're not denying your boss is hot, I add, because it's fun to rile her up. Speak of the devil, Maeve whispers out of the corner of her mouth as we walk into the lobby, its mirrored walls reflecting the opulent chandeliers above. Her hot-ass billionaire boss is walking our way at 12 o'clock. As if we've summoned him, a tall, dark-haired man with a chiseled jaw, ink on his knuckles, and an intensity in his eyes strides across the hotel lobby. When he spots Fable, something flickers in his gaze. It's more than recognition. It's awareness. Interest, maybe? He stops at my redhead friend.
Evening, Fable. How's everything? Are you staying here tonight? I can comp you a room.
I swear he looks at her more like he wants to take her to a room than gift her one. We're doing a photo scavenger hunt, Fable says, then quickly introduces us to the man. When she's done, he nods our way.
If you need anything, let me know.
Then he heads off, a faint hint of expensive cologne trailing behind the mogul of a man. Someone has a crush on you, Maeve mutters under her breath. Shut up, he does not, Fable admonishes. I clear my throat. Hate to break it to you, but that man has secret crush written all over him. Does not, she says. I hold up my hands in surrender. Fine, I will back down, but I reserve the right to say I told you so someday. Maeve nods in solidarity. Double I told you so. Fable rolls her eyes, but spins around. Focus on the prize. We have a 2-hour cake countdown. We get to work. Fast. We march past the elegantly arranged bouquets of dahlias in the hallway off the lobby, their petals shimmering in the soft glow of the lighting, then head into the fancy ladies' room. In front of the mirror, we give our best pouty faces as we snap a mirror selfie. After that, we're on to the next stop. Take a picture by a statue, I read off from the notes. Maeve screws up the corner of her lips, eyes narrowed. It doesn't take long, though. Ooh, the giant coffee cup sculpture at Yerba Buena Gardens, she says, then rattles off details. It's part of a temporary art installation, a public art initiative. Ask me how I know. She wiggles her fingers, urging us to ask. How do you know? Fable says, taking the bait. Because I'm obsessed with public art. I want someone to commission me to paint another giant installation. Could be coffee cup murals, anywhere in the city, she says wistfully, or anything for that matter. But then she seems to shake it off. We'll have to get there quickly, though, so we can get in the cup. The cops aren't usually there till late. I stop, digging my heels in. What? Cops show up? Yes, but mostly after 10. I shake my head. Nope, pick another statue. So there's no do illegal things on your top 10 list? Fable asks Riley. Not at all, I say. And maybe I'm a goody two-shoes, but it'll keep us all out of jail, and I fear Maeve could find jail easily on her own. Fine, we'll pose on it, not in it, Maeve says with an aggrieved huff. We catch a bus to Yerba Buena Gardens, a multi-block square that includes a playground, lawn, bowling alley, skating rink, and theaters. As the bus rolls down Union Street, Maeve cocks her head my way. Hey, I just thought of something. Is this on your list somewhere? Taking a bus with my girlies? No, doing a photo scavenger hunt, or taking pics like this? I blink, awareness hitting me sharp and fast. Actually, it is. Number 5, take photos of your fun times. Why hadn't I thought this girls' night out activity qualified for the list? A photo scavenger is precisely number 5. But it never occurred to me. How did I miss something so obvious? It's a little embarrassing, frankly. Because you want to do the list with Wesley. And I've been doing this item with him without realizing it either. I flash back to the pictures Wes and I have taken so far. The photo outside the Bay Area Banter Brigade's theater, then the pictures on Sunday as we baked and ate. A record of the list, I'd said in the kitchen, somehow completely oblivious to the fact that we'd already been doing number 5. We've done it so well, we could even check it off. We've been snapping pics as we go. But that's not why I'm embarrassed I missed this girls' night out as a possible number 5. My stomach churns, because the list feels like it belongs solely to Wes and me. The list is something I do with him. It's dating him without the label of dating. Saying that out loud, though, is like cracking open my chest. Maeve nudges me, asking, "So is it?" Shoot, I haven't even answered her. Would something like this qualify? Fable asks too. That's a reasonable question. Have fun with friends feels like a list item, but I also want to have fun with my roomie, so I do something I don't love. I shake my head. Bond with friends isn't, I say, pasting on a grin as I spin a tall tale. Fable narrows her brow, maybe thinking I've missed the point when she adds, I think she meant this whole thing, pics and all. Not really, I say, doubling down on the lie, flicking a strand of my hair off my shoulder like that proves I'm not making things up. Fable arches a brow. You lie. I flinch. I don't. You do. I bet this is on there, she says. My heart slams hard against my rib cage. I feel caught. It's not, I say as she grabs at my shoulder bag like she can find the list in it. The list's at home, though. As the bus curves past Market Street, Maeve leans forward in the blue plastic chair to stare slack-jawed at me, wagging a finger my way. This is on the list, somehow, and you don't want this to count. She says it playfully, but like she's delighting in busting me. Shame climbs my throat, combined with foolishness. I misled my friends. I roll my lips, then blow out a breath. Fine, fine, you're right. Taking photos of fun times is on it. This counts, okay? I missed it and I felt stupid. But Maeve doesn't back down. That's not what's going on. She stares at me longer, studying me like she can find the answer in my expression. She must find it since she says, Oh my God. I know what's going on. You're doing this with Wesley, aren't you? I drop my face into my hands, groaning. But when the bus rumbles to a stop at Yerba Buena Gardens with a mechanical growl, I let go and look her in the eyes. Yes, I admit. And there's a momentary reprieve as we trot down the steps. Once we head into the gardens, I revisit the topic with a genuine apology. I don't want to be the friend who fibs. I'm sorry, guys. Maeve grabs my arm, tugging me to a nearby bench. Josie, you don't have to apologize. Fable gives me a soft smile, exonerating me too. Yeah, it's not apology level. We get it. But why didn't you tell us what's going on? That's the bigger issue. I've been keeping something from them, something important, that I'm spending more and more time with my roomie, that I'm developing feelings for him, feelings I shouldn't act on. Correction. Shouldn't act on again. Yes, but it's stupid. He's my roomie, and I'm leaving, and he works with my brother, and it's all just annoying, I say with a frustrated huff. Maeve sets her head on my shoulder, sighing sympathetically. I'd have been surprised if you weren't falling in like with him. You liked him that first night. Now you've gotten to know a man who's been nothing but generous since the first time you met him, she says, her voice stripped of its usual sass and teasing. She's straightforward, and I love it. Maybe it was all supposed to happen. I take a moment to consider her view of fate. Since I landed in town, Wes and I have been in each other's orbits. We can't stop circling each other. Maybe there's an inevitability to us, I admit. Sometimes two people are just meant to be in the same place, Maeve says, her artist soul shining through. I noodle on that for a beat, drawing in a breath of cool November air. I've read enough stories to bet on that little thing called fate to bring people together who need each other. That might be true in some ways, I acknowledge. Wes and I seem to understand each other in the way that we both want and need, but on the other hand, we're not going to be in the same place for very long. And the fact that we literally live in the same place right now is a problem. I look from Maeve to Fable and back, shrugging helplessly. What if something happens and then I don't want it, or he doesn't want it? We're stuck together and that would be weird. Uncomfortable too. My back aches in a reminder of the kid waiting to torture me on Maeve's couch if I need a new place to stay. I really like living there. We're all quiet for a beat, humming. Sighing, thinking. You really don't think a romance or relationship can go anywhere? Fable asks, clearly needing to make sure we've turned over every stone. It's hard to imagine it will. There's a lot in the way. It's so hard finding a job and a place, and even if those aligned, I don't finish the thought because I don't have more to say. Wes and I are complicated. Besides, I want to focus on my friends. But thanks for listening. I needed it. Maeve shoots Fable a look. Fable shoots one right back at her, like an unspoken language. With a nod, Maeve squeezes my thigh. You should take pics with him. For the list. This is a fun girl's night out. That's all. My heart swells with love for them, for this gesture, for their understanding. I love you too, so much. I say, then I wrap an arm around Fable, another around Maeve, and hug them close. This should be on every list. Tell your friends you love them. Maeve's eyes glisten, and she swipes at her cheek. Fable rolls her lips together, holding in obvious emotions, but not for long. Love you, Maeve says softly, and Fable echoes her with, love you too. I check the clock on our hunt. 1 hour down, one to go. 59 minutes later, we finish with a photo of a group hug with a random dog, a human pyramid of the three of us, and a photo bomb in the ferry terminal before we head to a cake shop for our reward. I'll miss them too if I can't find a way to stay. I'll miss them so much. Chapter 27, A Thousand Dirty Words. Josie. I shouldn't do this. I really shouldn't. And yet that night when I'm home in Wesley's place, wandering through the living room, my footsteps echoing as I enter the kitchen, I stop and snap a picture of the kitchen counter. We agreed not to do that again, but a photo's not breaking a rule. That's what I tell myself as I hit send on a text. Josie, does this count for number 5, take pictures of fun times? It's late in New York, a little past midnight, so I don't expect to hear from him. But as I leave the bathroom after applying my lotions and potions, a reply blinks up at me.
Wesley. Well, there were definitely fun times there.
A smile takes me hostage, along with my reason and good sense. As I walk to the bedroom in the dimly lit home, I dictate another text. Josie, I went to the resort with my friends for a girls' night out. I thought about the last time I was there.
Yeah, what about it?
They say text has no tone, but his sounds intrigued. Josie, I thought about when you said, what are you into? Nobody has ever asked me that before. No one.
Their loss, my gain, since you knew exactly what you wanted. I can still hear you saying it.
A delicious chill slides down my spine as I wander into my room, shedding my sweatshirt, a little intoxicated already by this exchange. Josie, what did I say? I haven't forgotten what I said. I doubt he has either. I just want to hear him say it or write it.
You said the hottest words ever.
My breath halts. A ribbon of heat unfurls inside me. He's lit a match. Then he drops it on some kindling, setting the blaze with his next message.
And I quote, can you bend me over the bed and fuck me hard?
And you understood the assignment. I float to the bed in a sex trance, remembering that night, but boomeranging to the other morning too, here in the house. That first night with him, he was my sexy stranger. The second time, he was my hot as hell friend.
What would you say now? If I asked you what you're into.
My lungs are hot. My bones are lava. I sit on the bed, my entire body aching for him. I close my eyes, picturing. Then I sink down onto the pillows and respond. Josie, your hands on me, your mouth exploring my skin, your dirty words whispered in my ear.
Where do you want my hands?
I drag a hand down my chest, then back up, touching the valley of my breasts, my skin tingling as I trace the path I want him to touch. I sigh greedily, a precursor to the moan building in my chest, then right back. My neck, my throat, my back. When you push me down, when you tug me close, when you put me in position. Except I don't send that. A picture is worth 1,000 words. Instead, I angle the phone's camera with my left hand, then push down my tank top so the tops of my breasts are exposed. Holding the phone, I take a picture of my hand spread across my tits, inching toward the hollow of my throat. After I check it, I hit send. Feeling bold, I stretch against the pillow, my neck long, my hand curling around it gently. Another pick. Before I can stop, I take off my shirt, flip to my stomach. Resting the phone against the pillow as a stand, I set a timer and strike a pose of me in a bra and jeans, my hand pressing on my back. I send it. 30 seconds later, my phone pings.
You are killing me.
I grin, giddy on his lust, craving more of it. I write another text. Don't die before you fuck me again. But, smiling wickedly, I rethink it, erasing that, writing something new, short to the point. Josie, your turn. I've never sexted before. I've never sent naughty pictures. I've never received them either. But when my phone buzzes, the throb between my thighs builds. A low, hot pressure spreads in my belly. I click it open. Oh my God, I say, all breath and fire. It's a shot of him from the chest down, taken with a view of the naked ladder of his abs. They're covered by his muscular forearm, his wrist, and his hand shoving his boxer briefs down. I can't see anything. There's no peen in the pic, but it's clear what he's doing. The idea of him gripping his cock right now is too much to bear. I dictate a reply. Josie, gonna need a sec with this.
Wesley, yeah, me fucking too.
Then I take that second and turn it into a minute or two as I shove my fingers down my panties and imagine Wes taking matters into his own hands across the country. In a hotel room in New York City, there's a tall, strapping, 6'3" hockey stud with inked arms, ripped abs, and talented hands fisting his cock. To me, I am a volcano, and soon I erupt. I try to catch my breath, but I'm still panting, still a little electric everywhere as I reply. Was that number 5? Take pictures of fun times? Smiley face. Wesley sends a picture of his face with a cocky, satisfied smile. It makes my chest ache. I wish it were this weekend. I wish he were here. And I know we shouldn't do this, but I did it anyway. I guess I was in a fuck it kind of mood. I hop out of bed, grab a few things, then take one more picture, a photo of the list, updated. 1. Have a one-night stand with a sexy stranger. That's done. 2. Overcome a fear. That's done. 3. Make a friend who's nothing like you. That's done. 4. Eat dessert for breakfast. That's done. 5. Take pictures of your fun times. It's okay to stop and snap a pic. That doesn't mean you're not living in the moment. It means you're giving yourself a beautiful memory for later. Check. We're halfway done, and it feels like time is running out.
Chapter 28. Take it off. Wesley. I'm addicted to these pictures. I'm practically climbing out of my skin on Saturday morning when I wake up in the team hotel, flicking through them again, staring at them, enjoying them. I think about them at breakfast with my teammates. I think about them as we check out of the hotel. I think about them on the way to the New York Arena for a Saturday afternoon game. But that's the problem. I can't have a woman on my mind when I'm playing, especially against my former team. I want to do well against everyone, but I especially want New York to miss me hard. I liked it here in the city. Liked the fans, liked the camaraderie. Tried not to take it personally when they traded me last season. I had the stats, had the skills, had the ability to play well here. Am I pissed they let me go? Hard to be when I'm playing even better in San Francisco. Their loss, my gain. Still, I want to show them it's their loss. That'll take my mind off those goddamn pictures, too. When we reach their arena, I laser in on hockey, only hockey. New York wins the faceoff and charges down the ice ferociously, their center hell-bent on scoring early. He slams the puck toward Max, and like it's invisible, the black disc flies right past our goalie. Well, shit. The lamp lights in the first 15 seconds. That won't do. That won't do at all. Maybe I'm having a delayed reaction to the trade, but fuck them for not needing me. Screw them for casting me off. I'm not letting my new team lose to my old team. When the line changes, I hop over the boards, single-minded in my pursuit of one thing and one thing only. A win. Whatever it takes. Maybe I'm a little hungrier, since it hasn't been the greatest series of away games. It's a rare week when we play four games. We've played two since our win in Vegas and lost both. I'd really like to salvage this trip and return to San Francisco evened up on this road trip. As we're jostling in the corners, I get knocked into the boards. They get the puck, and New York rushes ahead towards center ice. I'm flying there seconds later, but Alexei snags the puck from their forward, then passes it back to me as I spin around. I've got it, and I skate toward their net as fast as I can. But the toughest defenseman on the New York team, a big, mean guy named Carlson, strips me of the puck when I'm this close to the net. Fuck, I mutter. He flashes a dickhead smile.
Looks like you missed us. Can't say the same.
I know this drill. I was on the same side of it when I played with him. Guy is mouthy, and yet I'm letting it get to me since I'm clenching my jaw as I hop off the ice. My annoyance skyrockets, though, in the second period, when Carlson's blocking my every move, knocking me into the boards, chirping at me with real winners like,
"Guess you went soft on the West Coast," and, "We traded you just before you started sucking."
He's always been an asshole, but I vastly preferred it when he was an asshole to others. Irritation pours through my veins, but I do my best to ignore it. A few minutes later, after Asher flips the puck to me, I try to get a shot on goal, and I'm this close. I swear I'm this close. But Carlson barrels toward me and I rush the play, colliding with their goalie instead of slipping a puck past them. Fuck me. I grit my teeth knowing it's coming. A 2-minute penalty for goaltender interference. I hit the box and stew. Should I have tried to avoid contact? Yes. You can't take a shot while messing with the goalie's ability to defend the net. And yet I did, because of a former teammate's trash talk throwing me off. The New York fans are chanting power play, but the guys on my side hold them off. Thank fuck I didn't make it worse for my team. When I'm out of the box, I try to shove whatever residual emotions I didn't think I'd have far, far away, like to the South Pole far. Once I'm back on the bench a few minutes later, Coach McBride comes over and gives me a chin nod.
"Put that out of your mind, Bryant. Got that?"
It's said gruffly, but without judgment. Like he understands but needs me to move the hell on. Fair enough. "Yes, sir," I say, then narrow all my focus to the game. When I'm back on the ice and get a shot on goal again, I refuse to mess it up this time. Hard and aggressively, I send the puck flying till it lodges in the twine, taking no prisoners. Yes. That ties it up, and in the third period, Chase scores to seal a messy win. It's exhausting, but that's hockey for you. The best part is when I leave the arena, heading toward the team bus, and my phone buzzes with a text.
"Josie, fuck Carlson."
A smile has me in its grip. Immediately, I'm picturing Josie at our next game, parked in a seat on center ice, cheering me on and heckling the other team. That thought revs my engine, her ferocity. I would love to play with her in the house. "Wesley, we need to get you in the stands at the next game. Ideally in my jersey, but I don't add that."
"Josie, I'll wear my good luck scarf."
A burst of hot adrenaline rushes through my veins. I don't even need to ask why she's calling it her good luck scarf. I'm betting it's because she wore it the night she met me. By the time we're crossing the tarmac to the team jet a little later, the thrill of victory hasn't totally worn off, nor has the buzz from Josie's texts.
"Did you get a feeling that Carlson has bad blood with Bryant?"
Max drawls as we head down the aisle, claiming our usual seats. Asher shakes his head sympathetically as I shoulder my way into his row, across from Max.
"Did you date his mom?" he asks. "Steal his girlfriend? Put whiny bastard as the name on the back of his jersey one night, and he didn't notice?"
I smile evilly. "Should have done that one," I say. Then I scratch my jaw as I settle into the seat. I really can't let the assholes of the world get me down. But I did beat him at poker every single time. Dude has zero strategy.
"And you, man, you're all fucking strategy," Max says with a proud nod.
"You are, and we appreciate it," Asher adds just as earnest. It's a rare moment among these guys when we aren't giving each other hell. when we're abundantly honest, and I'll take that, along with the bruises from all the hits I took tonight. Thanks, man, I say, to the both of them. Speaking of, we should play, Max says, then takes out a deck from his bag and shuffles. Before Texas Hold'em starts, though, my phone pings with a message. I'm itchy to check it. What if it's from Josie again? My hand moves to my pocket, but I stop myself. I should just play cards. It's risky to open a message now. Then again, my texts don't automatically show pics. Max isn't done dealing. Screw it. I'm too amped up on the dizzying possibility of a note from her. So I click on my texts lightning fast, but groan in disappointment. I cut myself off before I say dad to my friends, saying agent instead. He reps Alexei too, and plenty of other pro hockey players. Best if I try to think of him as my agent.
Go ahead, Max says, getting it.
I shake my head. I'll catch him in between hands. But I fold easily. Maybe I'm distracted by what I know is coming from him. Criticism. When they're upping the ante on the hand, I return to his text, and yep, I'm right.
Dad, nice goal, but you've got to play cleaner. Haven't seen a goaltender penalty on you in years.
No shit, Dad, it was practically Carlson's fault, but that's not an excuse.
Wesley.
Yeah, I know, but being back in New York and all... Only the second I hit send, I know that won't fly with him, and he calls me on it.
Dad, what does that have to do with it?
My stomach churns, my teammates get it. My dad probably never will. Trouble is, he's also...
Right.
I don't usually let that shit get to me. I was sloppy, that's why Coach told me to move on. Different approach. And I like coaches better. I blow out a breath and suck it up.
Wesley.
Good point, you're right. Thanks for the reminder.
Dad, happy to help. Let's get together for lunch when you're back in town. We also still need to find some art for your walls. Tomorrow?
I stifle a groan. I just want to do nothing tomorrow.
Wesley, I'll hit you up then.
I do ignore the phone this time as I play a few hands with my teammates, feeling understood with them, with how they saw the interaction with Carlson. Who cares if my dad and I don't see eye to eye? At least my teammates do. We play for an hour and Max and Asher take all my money. Coach strolls by at one point and Asher tips his chin at the guy in charge, saying,
Coach, you want to get in on it? Bryant is an easy target tonight.
He stops, peers at Asher, and gives him a stern, serious look.
But I'm not. You still sure you want me in?
Asher gulps, blanching.
No, sir.
We play a few more hands till the game peters out, and I waggle my earbuds. Gonna chill, I say. Then I turn to the window. But chilling doesn't come easily. As we slide into that time on the flight when everyone goes into their own worlds, I can't quite get into my playlist of new tunes. I'm antsy, revved up. My phone is burning a hole in my pocket. My mind is flooding with those images of Josie from last night. My body is crackling as we cross the country flying closer to home. I haven't seen her since last Sunday. It's been nearly a week. I thought about her more than I'd expected while I was out of town. I'm still thinking of her. I'm not sure that's going to stop. I'm not sure I want it to stop. I click open the messages, sliding my thumb over the screen, weighing my choices. I'll be in the same space as her very, very soon. What's that going to be like? But I know what I want it to be like. If one fuck Carlson text thrills me this much, I'm pretty sure I made my choice. I send her a text with no guilt, no